It's finally gained mainstream attention. The relentless spread of white Christian nationalist rhetoric in evangelical circles, informing and affirming extremist political positions, which are then pushing the religious right even further into radical territory. One could argue it's almost too late at this point. But perhaps even worse, we're seeing the self-righteous, confrontation-loving tone of Christian nationalism surface in other faith contexts as well. Sarah Riccardi Swartz studies religion and conflict at Arizona State University and is an expert in the culture of Orthodox Christianity. Her Religion Dispatches article is headlined, "Orthodox Church's Authoritarian Anti-LGBT Statement Poses Serious Threat to Academic Freedom." And that's a mouthful. And I'm pleased that it brings Dr. Riccardi Swartz to State of Belief Radio. Sarah, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me on.
You know, I'll bet a fair number of people who are listening aren't familiar with the American Orthodox Church. Could you share just a brief primer with us?
Sure. Well, there's really no American Orthodox Church. There is a series of immigrant faiths that came to the United States at different points in the history of what becomes the U.S. So we have Greek Orthodox. Many people might know them by their wonderful food festivals. We have Russian Orthodox, and a wide variety of Orthodox churches that we typically and historically think of as tied to a national community. So Orthodoxy in the United States has these different permeations. One of them happens to be the Orthodox Church in America, which has a large contingent of American converts to the faith. So people who are not immigrants and who found Orthodoxy often later in life through searching or reading about it.
So how many people claim affiliation or membership or whatever they call it in this stream of churches?
So Orthodoxy is a minority faith in the American landscape. We have less than a million members. And the largest contingents of those would be the Greeks, the Antiochians, which come mostly from Lebanese background, and also the Orthodox Church in America. And then from there, you have smaller groups. So you have the Russian Orthodox Church outside of Russia, which is the community I work most frequently with.
You write about a recent encyclical that appeared to maintain traditions, but in fact broke some new ground. Talk about that, if you would.
Sure. Well, the Orthodox Church is historically what we might consider a conservative Christian tradition. So they hold to certain moral values. They are not inclined to accept homosexuality as part of their worldview. They believe marriage is between a man and a woman. And they're focused on what we might consider as traditional social moral values. And we see that coming up a lot right now. Especially since the 2016 election, we see Christians who consider themselves conservative talking about the idea of conservative or traditional family values. Now, that's nothing new in terms of the Orthodox Church. They've always held to these teachings, and the Orthodox Church in America, which this encyclical came out of in 1992, had already issued a statement on this, that they believed that marriage was fundamentally between a man and a woman, that homosexuality really had no place in the church's teachings on salvation. What was new about this encyclical, and what I found alarming as someone who is both a scholar of Orthodoxy in the United States and also a practitioner and who happens to be affiliated with the OCA, is that it also condemns scholars who want to think about, research, and talk about homosexuality, same-sex marriage, LGBTQ plus rights, in any way that might deviate from the church's teachings.
Well, who wrote and promulgated this particular encyclical?
Sure. So it was, at first, we as we understand it, was presented to the All-American Council of the OCA. So they have these councils that meet, and this year it was in Baltimore, Maryland. And from what we gather, it was the Synod of Bishops who came together and decided to write this encyclical. It was presented to the All-American Council by Archbishop Michael of New York and New Jersey.
And this may be a question you can answer or not, but do you read this encyclical as being something that is protective of the OCA, or is it meant to be proactive in American society?
I think it certainly is trying to be proactive. Right now within the Orthodox world, there's a lot going on. As we know, there's a war in Ukraine that the Moscow Patriarchate seems to endorse theologically. The Greek Church has recently had something that they consider, in some parts, a scandal, which is the baptism of children of a same-sex couple in Greece. And so I think all of this right now is the OCA pushing back against what they believe of is modernity infecting the church.
And how does that impact academic freedom?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, academic freedom, as the former chancellor of the OCA, actually, Father John Gillians wrote about in 2020, is it's inextricable from conscience and the pursuit of truth. And so as an academic who studies the church, I think that this is a problem because it historically does not align with what the church has taught. The pursuit of truth for me as an anthropologist who studies orthodoxy is about reality. So we have orthodox jurisdictions who do not want a dialogue, who are focused on creating their own sort of hyper-insular form of orthodoxy. I actually write about this. It's what I perceive of as reactive orthodoxy. It's a melding of Christian nationalism, of traditionalist values, and of these sort of authoritarian ideas of who can be in a group and who can't be in a group based on their gender identification, based on sexuality, based on their social moral leanings. And so I see this as this encyclical is not surprising. I see it as a product of the time because we're seeing this kind of censoring of academic freedom and thought widespread within conservative Christian communities.
Are there other such encyclicals that address things other than personal sexual identity?
I mean, certainly there's a wide variety of encyclicals that the church has written over the years, and each jurisdiction has their own. I have not seen one that's been this alarming in terms of telling people what they can and cannot say, people who are not attached to the church. So, for example, the encyclical states that any lay person who is a teacher or an educator cannot go against the teachings of the church. They will be punished, I assume, by a spiritual court. And what form that punishment takes, we don't know. That could be excommunication from the church. That could be a ban on them receiving communion for a while. There's all sorts of things. So I am quite shocked by this encyclical, and I'm also appalled that, in thinking about the history of the Orthodox Church, which was, you know, founded in debate and dialogue at councils, historic councils that the church still refers to, that they would take these measures to suppress the ideas and thoughts of their laity and of their clergy.
So I don't mean to ask you a question that is going to take you out of your comfort zone, but on a personal basis here, are you concerned about recrimination or retribution against you for raising this issue and speaking publicly about it?
Sure. I mean, you know, I am a anthropologist at a secular institution. I actually just moved to Northeastern, where I'm an assistant professor of religion and anthropology. And so I'm quite comfortable in secular academic institutions. What I am alarmed about is and it's mostly lay people on social media who feel like what I write is heretical. And it's not. there is nothing in what I write that goes against what the encyclical actually says. I am, in fact, critiquing the encyclical because it suppresses the ability of people to have free thought. And that is a problem because orthodoxy as a religion is supposed to be founded in love and healing. And this is not what this is about.
How does all of this overlap with the January 6th, 2021 insurrection?
You know, I've written about this a lot, but within Orthodoxy, we find a growing contingent of far-right believers. These are mostly converts to the faith, mostly males, and they're quite young, in fact, 20s to 40s. What I find fascinating is why these converts are drawn to Orthodoxy at this particular moment, and what that might tell us about the American religious landscape. You know, I spent a year living with a far-right community of converts to the Russian Orthodox Church outside of Russia in Appalachia. And they were very disenchanted, not only with American religion, but American politics. And so I think that just like other forms of conservative religion, Orthodoxy is experiencing a group of dissidents who believe that they have found something that aligns with their political beliefs. But in reality, what they're doing is transforming an immigrant faith into the image of what they believe it should be.
Very interesting. And is this extremism building bridges with Orthodox structures in other countries? And how about white evangelicals in the United States?
You know, it's really interesting because we see this relationship between converts here and Russia, certainly. And we even, if we listen very closely to the Moscow Patriarchate, Patriarch Kirill, he uses the language of the American culture wars. And he's not doing it for his Russian listeners. He's doing it for his American listeners abroad. It's very clear that he's doing that. I mean, his justification of the war in Ukraine at one point was gay pride parades. And so there's most certainly connections between more radicalized groups in Russia and the United States. And among evangelicals, it's quite interesting here because while Orthodox converts who consider themselves more radicalized or far right, they use the language of white Christian nationalism, they often will not associate with evangelicals because they see them as heterodox. They see them as not fully conforming to the faith. So their goal is always to missionize among evangelicals and try to get them to become Orthodox.
Wow, what a complicated scene for someone who attempts to practice their faith in that world.
Indeed.
What else should our listeners know about the trends that you're observing?
I think it's important to know that this is, you know, again, Orthodoxy is a minority group. The far-right community within this minority group is quite small. But that doesn't mean that we should overlook them. If you think about January 6th, it was a constellation of different groups that came together in this one violent act. And when you have people that have similar or overlapping worldviews, they unite for causes that they believe in. And so I would be alarmed. I mean, we have people within the Orthodox Church who believe that Russia can save the world, that Putin is right to invade Ukraine. At the same time, we have people that hold to neo-Confederate ideas about the American South. And there are white nationalists, and there are white supremacists. And so I think that we have to be cautious about how we think about these communities, because it's easy to overlook them. They're geographically diffuse across the United States. And it's easy to say, hey, this is just a fringe movement within a very small religious community. But the internet is a powerful thing, and it connects this fringe group to other fringe groups across the United States. And the result could look very much like January 6th again.
Wow. Well, I thank you for bringing this to the attention of our listeners and to opening our eyes to something other than the headline-grabbing majority. Dr. Sarah Riccardi-Swartz is Assistant Professor of Religion and Anthropology at Northeastern University. She's an expert in Orthodox Christianity and the author of Between Heaven and Russia, Religious Conversion and Political Apostasy in Appalachia. Her Religion Dispatches article is headlined, Orthodox Church's Authoritarian Anti-LGBT Statement Poses Serious Threat to Academic Freedom. And we'll link to it from stateofbelief.com. Sarah, thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
That's all the time we have for this week's show. Your donations help keep us on the air. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and to be part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and company. I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week for whom you think this might be helpful. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, go team. I'm Jack Moline, and that's State of Belief.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.